by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield. Good evening, George.
All right, Charlotte. Boy, I tell you what, the weather is really bad. I understand y'all are waiting for an ice storm to come in. Is that right?
Yeah, I've definitely seen worse. They keep putting it off. You know, it's like they forecast for in the morning, then they forecast for the evening, and then they forecast for tomorrow. So we're seem to be missing the worst of it, but there is ice out there, like on the back steps, but nothing accumulated.
Oh, man. That's too bad. Well, you know, tonight, and we're going to give our listening audience a preview of a coming forum meeting that's going to be taking place next week, next Tuesday, the 17th of January through the 20th at Davos, Switzerland. And it's called the World Economic Forum. They meet yearly in Davos, Switzerland for about 4 days. Meeting there will be the top 1,000 corporations in the world, along with an additional 2,000 attendees that represent broadcasters, academicians, and so forth, and news people. So it's going to be a meeting that's going to be important, more important this year than normally, because they're addressing this so-called Trump problem. They're playing that Trump card, see, and they're not welcoming him with open arms, and they fear that the Trump administration is going to not feed or help grow globalism. These people are for globalism. And they're against nation states. They want to put together a new world order. They call it the world order. In many cases, is one description that they use. We call it the new world order, but a lot of people use that description. But what they're doing is putting together at this new this latest meeting next week. They're going to start putting together the ideas about how to counter Trump and how to deal with him and how to get him over to their global side, okay? And anyway, we've got these people out there, and you said something earlier off air, Charlotte, about interpreters and so forth.
Yeah, tell us about this new phenomenon.
Well, you know, in this case, what the World Economic Forum planners have done and founders have done is that it's real critical this year. They've always been interpreters where you'll have, you know, like a priest is an interpreter for the word, for the Bible to his parishioners or his followers or whatever. Well, these people over the years have built themselves up into being interpreters of economics worldwide, see. And that's basically how they're carrying out their influence, is they're saying, we're the experts on world economics. Come to Davos, learn what the latest is, and then go back and disseminate that to your different countries, see. But what these interpreters are doing this year is they're using as a general theme, the fourth, industrial revolution, okay? And what that basically is that they're delineating out four different industrial revolutions. They're saying the first one occurred in 1784 based on steam, water, mechanical production equipment. Saying industrial revolution number two, 1870, a division of labor, electricity, and mass production. The third industrial revolution was 1969, based on electronics, IT, and automated production. Now, what they're saying for their theme for their meeting this year is a fourth industrial revolution based on cyber physical systems. And what they're saying is that that this fourth revolution is distinct from the third because there's one, it's one of velocity, scope, and systems impact. Okay? And that's very interesting when they use those kinds of terms to describe this fourth revolution, this fourth industrial revolution, Charlotte.
Yeah, fascinating.
You know, what has occurred is that with this 3D modeling and so forth that's come online, all these new inventions and all these new internet-related types of creations is that the industrial base, the industries are losing control over ideas, see? And so as they're losing control over ideas, then they're wanting to try to regain that control over ideas. And this is going to be some of their one-on-one type of discussions on how to do this. We still have patent law and we have copyright law. So what we're talking about, intellectual property, see, is that the individuals today on the internet using tools, very low-cost tools, can start creating their own ideas, their own objects, and they can start marketing those from themselves, having created the object, directly to the consumer. And that bypasses these interpreters, or these world elites, you could say. And so they're very worried about that today, and that's really what they'll be discussing there in Davos.
Think that's going to drive the agenda?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a major drive, because what they've done in the past is they've controlled, they still control, there are bankers there galore, okay? A number of these 1,000 top corporations in the world, a number are banks, the biggest banks in the world. All Citibank, you know, Bank America, all those will be Wells Fargo, all those will have people there. And so the banking sector has been the most dominant thing because they've created a mechanism of money creation. And we're going to have about six deals, six items at the end, and talking about the real problems about money power, see. And you know, this money power, we've discussed that about the City of London in the past, haven't we, Charlotte?
Oh yeah. Do talk about the money power, because it's quite serious.
Yeah, you know, the City of London in 1782, there was the Rothschilds were consultants to the prince there in the Frankfurt area, and they wound up later managing this wealth, this prince's wealth, in London. And this gave them a start. But anyway, the Rothschilds are a big, success factor in the City of London becoming a world power, money dominant city. And when I say
can we say this is because they have a bank in nearly every country in the world except for maybe Iran, Syria, Russia?
Yeah.
Or are they in Russia now too?
Yeah, well, what they've been able to do, and we're not talking, the city gained its power because they started trading. They had a tremendous stock market. They had a bond market, trading in commodities worldwide. And the British have been very dominant in the trading of commodities worldwide. So in this trading of commodities and stocks and bonds and so forth, it became the center of the City of London is what we're talking about, 1.1 square miles. We're not talking about the large area of London. We're talking about the financial center. So when we say the City of London, we're talking about the financial area of London that's very powerful. They have their own security. They have their own court system. And it's a city, a corporation that's separate and apart from the general London area. Okay.
And they have some art. There's a dragon. Am I mistaken?
Yeah, a griffin. A griffin. In the median there, and I've been there and seen this. I've been in the London, City of London there in the financial sector. But they have what they call a griffin, and it's a very ominous looking, dragon, you know, lion dragon type thing, you know. It's formidable, but it sort of says what they're about. And these people are really into occult type of thinking. And so it sort of says where they're coming from. to a great extent. But anyway, that money power is very great. See, the ability to loan out to people or to call loans on people is one of the worst things, of course, because you can wipe them out, see, or you can control them with the fear of their loans being called. And that's basically what banking relies on there. There's two schools of banking thought. One, the British idea was to make a loan to someone for future control of the property and eventual default on the loan. So you might overloan to someone for a property you might want eventually. The Americans' idea and system years ago, and these are both, have changed somewhat, was to make a loan and make that interest, see? And these are two schools of banking thought and practice generally, you could say. But anyway, the City of London is very powerful. It's made up of, you know what reminds me of this Davos man, Charlotte, that Huntington came up with? You remember that?
What's that? Refresh my memory. No, I can't say I do.
Well, anyway, the Davos man, Samuel Huntington, wrote extensively about political matters. He was a political scientist out of Harvard. And he talked about the Davos man, and he referred to the Davos man as a global elite, okay? Very wealthy men. They meet there at Davos once a year. They're internationalists versus nationalists, okay? And anyway, Samuel Huntington, in Wikipedia, we're going to have a click off there. You can go in there and get his definition. But it's a man that believes that they are apart from nation states, that they are internationalist, and that's how they manage the world, not their countries. And so,
but George, these men reside over sovereign wealth funds or other type of agency relationships we should be aware of?
Charlotte, they're dominant in most of the countries that they live in, okay, or operate out of. These are truly internationalists. So, you know, it used to be where we had people that owned companies, okay. And now these people own multiple companies in multiple locations. So that's where the transnational idea came from, okay? And these people are truly transnationalist, okay? They have interest in multiple countries, in multiple companies. And they have no real loyalty to any one country. They're in there to make money, to keep the markets open, and that's why they're afraid of Trump, see? Trump's talking like protectionism, that we're going to put up tariffs and try to make this, field a level operating field here, you know, for everybody. And they don't want that. They want a total open market where they can go wherever they want to manufacture at the cheapest labor, and then they want to import their products into the markets without any tariffs whatsoever. And so that's generally what they're always concerned about, are companies or individual leaders, nation-state leaders, presidents and so forth, wanting to impose tariffs on their good importation of their goods. So they want to go like to Mexico and then make cars there and import them into the United States, see, what they're already doing, see. The Japanese are down there already. And Ford Motor Company is down there.
For the railroad, too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So these people operate on an international basis. They don't really. That's why today these people don't care a dang for U.S. Constitution, and they support means and methods to discredit the Constitution, saying it's old and it's decrepit and it's archaic, and we need to move on to some new system. See what I mean? They're always broaching those kinds of ideas with their believers and their followers. So, and you have a lot of you have academicians that just lick their boots. You know what I mean? And so forth. But anyway, Huntington not only came up with this Davos definition, but he also wrote a book called Clash of Civilizations. Okay, In 2004, we have the click-off on our site tonight. If you go into thesecrettruth.com, you'll find that click-off to go in and read about Huntington's Clash of Civilizations. And it's a Wikipedia reference there. But anyway, Huntington in the late 1990s, I should say, came up with the idea of a clash of civilizations. And he believed that future conflicts and wars in the future would have revolved around cultural differences versus ideology differences. Or said another way, instead of political differences, he conceptualized the idea that future conflicts and wars would revolve around cultural, which today he delineated in his books and writings on a religious differences, okay? So he divided the world into different religions and said in the future, conflicts will revolve around those different religious views. And that's why this Muslim thing against the West has some credibility, except for the fact that the Project for New American Century, Cheney and all those people, the neocons, in one of their writings, one of their white papers, wrote that we need something more to pull the American public together so that they can manage the public better. We need a new Pearl Harbor. And so, yeah, they went out and got us the 9/11, and they're using that 9/11 to accelerate the Muslim world and rile them up and get them hate-filled against the Western powers. And that's what we're seeing being played out right now, is that when we started going over there and attacking them as a result of 9/11, see, then they started attacking us and formulating terrorist cells against the West, you could say. But what's that?
I say that's fascinating.
So anyway, what they did was they came up with a Pearl Harbor in the name of 9/11. That got the Muslim community, the Islam community, riled up, and that's what they wanted. They wanted a riled up so they could go in there and start taking down those countries Wesley Clark said.
Yeah, 5 countries in 7 years, or was it 7 countries in 5 years? I can't remember.
Yeah, but anyway, Wesley Clark, in a video, it's out there on YouTube. I added it before, broadcast it before. Said, and the Arab Spring was that exact thing, see. And what they did was set up the Muslims to take the fall on 9/11, which is not truthful. They were not that responsible for it. But they've always pictured the world as the Muslim and the jihadists and all them as being behind a 9/11. Then they could start attacking Afghanistan, Iraq, and then went into Libya and then Syria today.
Which we can't leave Israel out of this, because Israel was really they brought us the modern era of terrorism with the first King David Hotel bombing in Jerusalem in 1947 or 8, I think it was. And you can see on YouTube, George, there's
I know about the bombing. I know about those people became the leaders of Israel.
I know. That's all complicated. That story needs to be told yet. Zionism through World War I, II, and where we're at today, you know.
Well,
a lot of where the whole idea of terrorism, though, was the who's been tooting that idea for decades is,
well,
Israel.
Israel has capitalized on this clash of civilizations idea. Okay, they're capitalizing on the 9/11 too. So all of this is favoring a greater consolidation of the Israeli state into power. Now, that does not remove, though, Iran is over there all the time. And so, and Turkey is a big player. And in my interviews with Stephen, I'll get his name here in a second. But he says he wrote Reset Middle East. Okay, and basically in his book, okay, he set out the two new powers. Okay, in the Middle East would be Turkey and in Iran, and that's basically what is happening right now. Now, Turkey is something else, and we don't have time to discuss that, but that's a whole different subject and topic, but not appropriate for this discussion tonight. Anyway, this class of civilizations has benefited the Israeli state, and it's taken down these formerly Islam very strong, you know, connected and very organized cultures around the Islam religion. And of course,
well,
they've got the.
Well, let's not forget, Israel is a Jewish state. You know, it's a religious state in and of itself.
Yeah.
It likes to claim it's a democracy without a constitution and, you know, illegal warheads and all that other rest. But, you know, it's actually a Jewish state. So it's interesting what that fella said.
That's very interesting, Charlotte. But what we're seeing then is a consolidation of the West power around oil, by the way, because there was conflict with Syrian, with Assad, about whether or not to build a pipeline through the northern part of Syria and into Turkey. And Assad was not going along with that. And then all of a sudden you have this big civil war started by Hillary and her minions, see? And Hillary, this is why we couldn't allow her into the White House. She's totally New World Order. She's carrying out all of the orders of the Bilderberg Group, and chaos and death and destruction is what is left behind.
You can't leave NATO out of the mix. I mean, she was very much plugged in and turned on by NATO.
Well, someone said the other day that if you take the day that Obama went in and the day that he's going out, we've been at war the whole time. See what I mean?
Yeah.
So what he pretended to be and what actually happened are two separate things. And Hillary Clinton was right there fomenting this war state, especially against Libya and now later on against Syria. She provided impetus for that and planning for that. So now with Trump, he has people surrounding him like these Goldman Sachs people that I'm a little wary of, okay? So I'm not totally sold on those people around him at this time. So, I have some second thoughts about what's going to happen, okay? So it's going to be a mixed bag, I think, his administration, because he's typical. He's an authoritarian type of personality type. So those kinds of personality types tend towards supporting authority figures and authority means of control, see? And so we're going to see that kind of administration on the authority side. And so we got to be careful that we stand for individual freedoms on the other side, see? But Trump is more respectful of the American citizen than Hillary ever was. So I think in Trump's administration, at least the citizens will be more respected than they would have been under a Hillary. And we don't even know what she would have done, you know, during her administration.
One of the things Trump is going to provoke a conversation about the limits to growth. You know, the Club
right.
of Rome, they commissioned that book,
right.
writing of a book entitled Limits to Growth.
Right. Right, right.
And, Trump, you know, he's all about eminent domain, pipelines, growth. You know, I think we're going to see two internal forces at play, you know, sustainability, because, you know, it's a concept, you know, that
right.
was popularized, you know. Well, why don't you give us a little background on sustainability, and because I sure have some thoughts about that.
Well, no, what you brought up was the book that they sponsored, Limits to Growth, was the founding book on the founding the sustainability idea. Then they started getting that into the school system, see. And from then on, boy, they got it entrenched into the schools and taught all of our young people that. Based on environmental type of ideas, see. But it's a very strong concept now that everyone knows about and everyone has been indoctrinated into. But it came out of the Club of Rome, and Aurelio Pesci, owner of Fiat, and other people, they founded this idea. But they actually were oil and magnates and also industrialists, see. So they didn't come from any populist type of movement, see. They started creating these ideas as a control mechanism, see. And basically what has been going on is that you've got the Fabian socialist movement started in the 1880s in England. And that was to take England and convert them slowly, incrementally to a socialist communist state. You've had the Fabian socialist came over here to this country and started doing the same thing here starting in the 1900s. And we had the progressive movement, the socialist movement, the communist movement. And basically today, America is a mixed bag, see. It's not as democratic republic as it used to be, because we've got all this government money that's being spent and being doled out to millions of Americans are receiving checks. So that's where the socialist thing is part of our economy and our political system today. So we're not totally removed from that. See, now Trump comes in as an environmental, as an entrepreneurial type of person. But he's a producer and a builder, see. And the New World Order did not want anyone, they wanted an America that was just sort of dormant and that was plugging along, but would not be world dominant again, okay? And they fear Trump because we may become, I hope we become, world dominant again and start professing American ideals for the rest of the world again. That's what they did not want and do not want. And that's what they're meeting at Davos. They don't want Trump. They're still against him. They're not for him. They're still going to try to find ways to remove him or do away with him. I'm fearful. I'm fearful for Trump, period. What do you think, Charlotte?
Yes, it's going to be interesting. I come from a different generation. I am concerned about population growth and resource allocation and management. I don't think the Earth has an unlimited, you know, supply of oil and the rest of it. You know, I mean, we've changed the whole face of the Earth in the last 200 years. I mean, truly.
Right.
We've claimed that, you know, the scriptures say most major religion, at least in Christianity, go out and be fruitful and multiply and manage the, you know, tame the land. And I can't see any part of the world except maybe the Antarctica or the North Pole that really, you know, that hasn't already been tamed and used and polluted. And we've had speciation, you know, and all kinds of interesting things that have happened in the world in the last 200 years to change our environment, which is, I think sustainability is, it's an interesting concept. I just think it has, I'm not saying that, you know, I realize where the source of where it came from, but I also see some merit to it.
Well, I agree to a degree with you. And like we had Love Canal, remember that? And it got cleaned up.
Well, maybe it was a little before my time.
Yeah. But I mean, there were very industrial violations by chemical companies that were pouring stuff into creeks and rivers and so forth. So some of this environmental movement and regulation and cleanup efforts have been successful, and I applaud those, okay?
Because of the cancer rates, you know, and I don't think we've been, I don't think we're done in that area, George.
Well,
I've been reading about some pollution in Mississippi and all over, and then we had the oil spills all over the country with these pipelines.
Well, you know, the chemical industry, with the rise of chemical and petrochemical industries, the rise of cancer parallels that, okay? So, yes, cancer is related to the chemicals and the oil and gas and all this other stuff that we've been exposed to. That's for sure.
Okay, yeah, so, let's not forget the agricultural Roundup and the rest, too.
Yeah, and there again, yeah, on the Monsanto's side, I mean, you know. But what we have in Davos is we have people that are like control freaks. They don't want to relinquish any power to Trump or anyone else, see? And they want an absolute control over the world. They're losing control because this, we were talking about derivatives the other day, Charlotte, and they are not on top of the economics like they used to be, and it's getting out of their control. They're worried. They don't know what to do. They've tried this quantitative easing, which is buying up debt, having central banks buy up the debt, and that can only go so far, and that means that we're at the end of a real financial bust out. See, no one wants to. Yeah, right. A big one though this time, but no one wants to relinquish their debt. But now this gets to what we're saying about debt. Okay. And so I have a something here to play for us in a second, and I'll set it up here in a second. But anyway, it has to do with the actual finance minister. Okay, I'm going to play this. It's a real short one, and then we'll discuss it a little bit, Charlotte. But anyway, it's about a minute long, and it's the finance minister. It's a former finance minister of Argentina, Alfonso Prat Gay, and he's speaking on a panel discussion at Davos about a year ago in the 2016 Davos meeting. And so he has some very important things to say, and I'm going to playing that in just 1 second here, and we'll go from that, and then we'll talk about it, okay? So here we go. We're going to play it in just right now.
Gary, oh, go ahead.
Yes, no, I just wanted to make a broader point. I don't know if it's suitable for this discussion or not, but we're talking about debt all the time. I think we should spend some time at central bank debt because to some extent, at least my view is that this might have been the beginning of the cycle we're going through right now. You know, you look at central bank debt, basically money printing, over the last 6 years or so, it's gone up like 30 points worth of global GDP. So that's a massive increase in central bank debt. And we keep talking about household, you know, corporate, public. I think we should focus on central bank debt as well because, you know, this liquidity that has been sort of instilled into the system has created, in my opinion, quite a few distortions relative price-wise. And also it's created a dilemma for most central bankers. You had Mario in the previous session here. He was the savior of the markets today because yesterday he was very committed to keep, you know, issuing euros and so forth. And I think we should also think about that, you know, going forward. Are we on the central bank respirator such that any time, you know, the market sneezes, these guys will be called in to put out the fire? And if that's the case, maybe since the last global recession, not a lot of work has been done, with the exception probably of the U.S., to fix things, but rather to, you know, cover them up with massive liquidity, and that massive liquidity has gone to the right places in some cases and maybe to the not so right places in some other cases. So I just wanted to put that question over to.
Yeah, Charlotte, you see what we're up against now?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Is that was the finance minister, okay, of Argentina at the time last year at the last year's Davos meeting. Now he's sitting on that same panel discussion is Kenneth Rogoff, and Rogoff is a leading economist at Harvard, and he's written books and so forth about the debt being the major problem. Okay, and so what this finance minister out of Argentina is saying, yes, the central banks are what he was concentrating on, but it's debt overall. And what we have in, worldwide is we have something like $179 trillion of debt, and that equates to about 225% of the gross domestic product, and that's way, way out of proportion to the gross domestic product worldwide. And so, and as I understand it, the private debt far exceeds the public debt, so we're going to have a tremendous default in the private sector sooner or later. And this economy is not in good shape, see. And just recently, okay, there have been retail centers closing, companies. Lowe's is considering laying off between 15 and 20,000 employees. You're seeing a big layoff occurring, especially in the retail sector in this country. So things are not as strong and viable as the government is trying to make it appear to be. This is the problem with governments. They always try to put something up there as something greater than it is, see. And just talk us along, see. But the factors today, the figures today are stating what they are, and we do not have a strong economy. We have traded during Obama's administration. We have taken $26 you could say, jobs, and traded them in for $13 an hour jobs. That's what's happened. So we've lost the purchasing ability of many people has decreased. They're losing their homes as a result and having to move around and rent or live in cars or whatever. But you see that more often than not, see. And all the time we have this Davos meeting going on, and they're telling us how they're going to solve the world's problems, and they can't even come clean or be honest with Fukushima. You know that, Charlotte?
All right. Yeah.
Because it's spewing forth radiation. Tons of water is washing underneath the plant and washing through those corium masses that have melted down on three of those reactors. And that is going out into the North Pacific. There are reports now of coves along the West Coast, Monterey and so forth, that where there's it's devoid of sea life, way, way down what it should be. And so we first noticed it in British Columbia. Dana Dunford did a study up there. He's in a wheelchair, and he got up there and went out there on his inflatable boat and took photographs, established a photographic evidence. We had him on our Fukushima 2 conference here in Austin. And that's another thing, too, is that we went out and did two Fukushima conferences in 2014. We couldn't get 50 people there. See what I mean? Because the whole press and everybody here locally, all of these local news people, they were not on top of that and did not want to publicize it and would not support us. Whether it's these local affiliates of the TV station or these radio stations, they did not support us in trying to bring that to the American public. And now we've got problems in coming in from the West Coast because of the radiation. The levels are high, very high in some areas now. So anyway, we're working on that, Charlotte. But this is what gets me is that we've got these world authorities over here at Davos, and they're ignoring and reframing something called the Fourth Industrial Revolution and totally ignoring one of the largest, most dangerous tragedies that the world's ever had at Fukushima. See what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So anyway, that's sort of I'll get a little mad there. I guess I shouldn't.
Well, somebody needs to, George. It's disconcerting. I mean, it could be. I wonder just with Chernobyl and Mile Island, and it was Mile Island, right? What's it called?
Right.
And now Fukushima, and there's got to be more out there we don't know about. Submarines that have gone down with warheads on them, maybe in the northern oceans of the world. I mean, who knows what's polluting it out there? But my question is, the idea that this could be an extinction level event, just a slow motion one.
Right. Yeah, there are different ideas about why they're not addressing it. I had we interviewed the tsunami director in Honolulu. Remember that?
I do recall that, yes.
That night of Fukushima, we were all right on top of it, and we interviewed the director of the tsunami, center in Honolulu, Hawaii. And we were trying to get feedback, see, the tsunami hit Japan, but it wasn't that big. By the time it got it down to Hawaii, 3 or 4 feet, maybe, a couple of feet, it wasn't very strong height-wise. But it hit that east coast of Japan with a fury, and caused all those villagers to decimate those along the east coast there of Japan.
They perished, right? They had a pretty high death toll?
Thousands, yeah. But right now, they're allowing people to go back into areas that they shouldn't be allowed to go back into. And there was even some contamination of places in Tokyo. But there's still a bunch of plutonium being stored there at Fukushima. That's a very, very dangerous situation, especially for Tokyo. If I were an investor, I would, after the first year, I would have been starting to move all my investment out of Japan. And I think the astute investors are probably gone by now, because Japan can only get worse on a radiation contamination level. There, it's not going to get better there. They are lying to the people, the government is. And the poor people of Japan are being lied to. They're not being told the truth. And as a result, you're going to have a declining living standard. You're going to have a tremendous higher rate of cancer and so forth. And especially in children, okay? Because children
are, cancers, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, children are smaller, see, than adults. So it, so any kind of radiation affects a young child with a small body a great deal more than adults. Adults can stand radiation exposure much better than a small child. So we're already seeing a rate of thyroid cancer, stuff like that, that is way over the average in Japan already. They are not publicizing the truth about Fukushima today. And they have this national security law over there that will go against anyone that talks improperly about Fukushima. Okay? So they are not for the people. The government's lying to the people, and it's continuing. Now, that's why you talk about this Davos group over here. All what that Davos group is about is this. You bring so-called experts from all over the world, some of the most powerful corporate leaders and heads, the financial people are right there, and then you sit them down and you begin to establish a consensus of thought. In other words, brainwashing and mindwashing is what will occur next week at Davos. That's what it's about. And you do it under the guise that economics is a very credible science, and we have it all worked out. They don't have it worked out right now. They're scared. They're running scared, and they're getting they don't know what to do on this money question. And they've done quantitative easing. It didn't stimulate the economy. The economy is still in doldrums, and they're really running out of options. The next thing they call that they're even contemplating now is called helicopter money. And you know what that is, Charlotte?
No, what's that, George?
They're going to start giving people in their bank accounts money from the government. Okay? You're going to start crediting people that have bank accounts, $100 a month or something, and they'll go out and spend that, and they think that that might prove a rebirth of the retail section or sector or whatever. See, and that's called helicopter money. That hasn't been going on, but they're close to thinking about it now. See, but I mean, they're running out of options, see, and they have too much debt. Right now, there's too much debt. The cost of carrying that, that's why they had to go to zero or down almost to zero with the interest rates. The government, our government today, if the interest rates were any higher, they couldn't afford to carry that debt. Some countries couldn't. We're in a little bit better shape than some in the world, even in our existing condition. The talk in Davos is that in 2016 was that the Americans have addressed the debt question better than some other countries. Japan right now has 225% debt in relationship to their gross domestic product. They're the worst country in the world with the biggest debt. Okay? And so, and they haven't addressed that problem. They've been in this situation for decades now, and so forth. But the debt is the problem. Nobody wants to write it down or do away with it, and so it's not going away. It's still there, and you know, Davos isn't going to tell us anything. See what I mean? The party at Davos. There was one article written that came out, and it said that the meeting next week will take place against a backdrop of rising populism. And early indications suggest they will at least acknowledge the dramatic political shifts of the last 12 months. And that's Trump, see? And then Duterte, President Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines, he's a hellraiser. He went into office. They had the Brexit vote in UK to pull out of the European Union. That didn't go along with the, with their globalist plans, and so they've been hit quite a bit. See, from globalism, from populism. See, and Trump is someone that they do not, okay, want to address. Now, one of the things, you remember we talked about capitalism before, Charlotte?
Oh, sure.
Well, you know what they're saying over in Davos now?
What's that?
Here's what they're saying, an AP article out of London just in the last few days. Reforming the very nature of capitalism will be needed to combat the growing appeal of populist political movements around the world, the World Economic Forum said Wednesday. Getting higher economic growth, it added, is necessary but insufficient to heal the fractures in society that were evident in the election of Donald Trump as U.S. president and Britain's vote to leave the European Union. You see what they're doing? Huh?
They're alienating. They're brewing something.
Well, what they're doing, exactly. What they're saying is that we're the problem now because we're populist and we voted for Trump, or someone in Europe wants to leave the European Union like the UK voters. They're saying that we're the bad people now and we're the cause of the future problems. Economic. They're not pointing the finger at themselves. They're the problem. They've created a tremendous debt burden for everybody. They are the problem. Because this corruption level and all these people have created that debt to benefit themselves, okay? But they're not saying that, see? And they're not saying anything about Fukushima. And then we have David Rubenstein, a few years ago at one of the panel discussions at Davos there at the World Economic Forum saying, well, the solution is state capitalism. That's what he said. And you know who has state capitalism? The Chinese. That's called communism. You know what I mean? So they're putting forward the idea that the existing capitalism is a problem. They're being supported by the left-wing socialist communist on the left, say, which have been indoctrinated through many of our school systems into more collective thinking, you could say. And then they're trying to use those people to change to a state capitalism. And you know the reason. Remember we've researched this public-private partnership, Charlotte?
Yeah, the PPPs, right.
Okay. Now, they want state capitalism because they want to borrow from the state and then transfer the public infrastructure into their private hands, but with financing by the state. Okay. And the state then would have infinite capital. You see what I mean? That's what they're all about. They're all about transferring as much of the infrastructure, highways, bridges, everything that they can get their hands on, waterways, ports, anything that's publicly owned, they want to transfer into their own hands and run as a private enterprise, see? Then they can charge what they want to, see? And there's no limit on what they could charge then, see. The state still has limits on things. The power systems and all these other things would be taken over too if they were publicly owned, see. And into,
right.
So that's basically what I see, going on, in their own heads, see what I mean? And that's basically what they're working towards, at this time. And that article on AP was interesting because it said, oh, we've got to, you know, we've got to do this, and capitalism, the old form of capitalism, is dead. And these populist people, just, you know, they want Trump or they want to get out of the year. They're wrong, and they're not good for us anymore. This populist thing is no good. They used to say democracy and a vote was good for us, right, Charlotte?
Yeah.
Now they're turning it around and said, no, that's bad for our own interests. See. For us to vote in who we want to vote in or to establish a change, then that's bad for us, see, if it goes against their whole system.
Their power.
Oh, it's power, isn't it, huh?
Yeah, it goes against their control, dominance, and power.
Exactly. And that's really what we're up against all the time is this money power, right? And one of the things...
power to create money is pretty magical almost.
Yeah, it is. It is. One of the things I ran across in my studies this week and getting ready for this program was I defined it in our outline here as qualification maze. Okay? And this qualification maze is in looking at some of the infrastructure of the federal government and so forth. You have to be well qualified now and have all kinds of schooling and, you know what I mean, degrees behind you to get to first base doing anything. But what that means is that the more degrees you have, the more indoctrination and training that you've been subjected to. And that's why this Parag Khanna is a snake in the grass. He's proposing for America to become a technocracy. And in that technocracy, energy would be rationed out to us. And if we use very little energy, then we're a fine world citizen. If we use too much energy, then we're a detrimental influence to our government and to the
right.
to the environmental movement. So they're going to try to work this out with this Parag Khanna. He's graduated and been schooled, been trained by every New World Order think tank and institution in the world. So he's an example of what's wrong, what we should not do. So Parag Khanna, you've got the solutions. They're not solutions. They're problem, creators for freedom and liberty. So, I go against everything that he's for and all the, schooling and predispositions that have been put into him. I'm totally against. And we've been working against this New World Order for a long time. Well, what's your idea, Charlotte, about the latest going ons out here?
Right. Well, Praga Khanna, am I saying that correctly?
Praga Khanna. Yeah.
He's a senior fellow at the World Economic Forum. And has he been there year after year, George, or is he just there?
Well, what they do is the World Economic Forum pulls in people like him. They train them, see? And if they're conducive to the New World Order, then they'll pay them and support them and provide them with all kinds of contacts and resources. And that's what they did with Parag Khanna. Got me? He's on the way up. He's an Indian guy, by the way, out of India. But he's on the way up, okay? One of the things they never talk about is crony capitalism at the Davos meetings, okay? They are the crony capitalists. They support Davos, and that group supports crony capitalism, which is monopolistic capitalism. Okay? But they don't, Parag Khanna won't say anything about it. He doesn't write about it. He doesn't criticize it. He's not on the right side. And remember this thing that we talked about, capital at one time, Charlotte?
What
was the term? About the characteristic of a good capital and bad capital. Remember, I can't search for the word right. I'll think of it in a second. But anyway, there's legitimate ways to raise capital, right? And debt. Odious debt, okay? Remember? Oh, Charlotte?
Oh yeah, odious debt, of course, yeah.
I'd like Parag Khanna to get into a discussion with odious debt then and tell us about that. They won't touch those subjects. And odious debt basically is debt that has been created unconstitutionally or illegally by leaders over countries or in such a way without full permission from respective constitutional bodies and so forth that has created debt. And now look at what the Fed is doing all the time. All that money that they started doling out, they created a hell of a lot of debt. See? And that is not constitutional debt. See what I mean?
Sure.
And so it's odious debt. So we've got that to deal with in the future, but they're not going to term it that in that way, because then it would reveal that their mechanizations of what they're doing. But anyway, this is our preview for the World Economic Forum, which is going to begin next Tuesday in Davos, Switzerland. Professor Schwab is the founder of that. And not that they haven't done some good things either. They're addressing some problems. It's just that the real problem they're not addressing. And Fukushima, don't hear you talking about that right now, Professor Schwab. And the things that really matter out there, no, don't don't hear. So, and you're also saying about interest, Charlotte. Interest is a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, unfair usury, and also when you, you know, debt, government going into debt on behalf of the people is such a modern concept.
Right.
And frankly, it doesn't work very well. And I think 99% of the time you're going to end up with odious debt unless it's done on a local level.
But well, if you get permission,
this,
yeah.
Putting aside all this, yeah, all this presumed debt for war fighting and oil energy distribution and use to corporate globalization, that's just wrong. They can't
right.
finance the globalization of the world on the back of the American taxpayer.
Yeah, right. That's wrong. Well, now, what they'll do in most cases is that, like on bond issues here in the city of Austin, they get these people to vote for that stuff. When they vote for it, then they're giving them permission to create that debt. That is not odious debt. Okay? It's when they're going out and creating a burden through debt, but not getting voter approval. Okay? So you've got to be careful when you're talking about odious debt, you know, and defining it, you know, you got to make sure that it's debt that was created outside the constitutional system.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I know what you're saying today is that we don't have a constitutional system. We have a administrative law thing, and there's no telling who's creating what obligations
yeah.
at
and
any one time.
And
yeah.
if you want to get all weird about it, we can talk about admiralty law of the land, law of the
that's
water,
right.
law of the bank,
right.
and it gets very.
Right.
This stuff goes way back. It's not anything. We're just uncovering it in the modern era. And people
right.
call it conspiracy, and they call it this, and they call it that. They can't discredit it. It won't go away. It's a phenomena that we've been dealing with as Western civilizations evolve.
Well, that you know, yeah, that's a good point. The people that voted for Trump, that got him in there, they're aware of some of the aspects you just stated, okay? They don't have a full grasp, but they fear and they begin to suspect that they've been had and been hustled, see, by these elites. And that's why they voted for Trump, because he did speak out against the corruption and some of these hustles, okay? And that's basically, they felt like he had the best interest of the American public at heart. See, otherwise they wouldn't have voted for him. And another thing, reason why they voted for Trump was there were too many big power people and money people and all these people that were behind Hillary. Too many of them were against Trump. And that gave many, I had occasion to talk to a lot of voters. And some of the voters I talked to were Democrats who voted for Trump for that reason. They said there's too many big money people, big power people that are attacking Trump, so I'm voting for Trump. And so
not because he felt sorry for him, but
well,
because
not,
he must have been onto something. He must have the tiger
well,
by the tail.
That what they basically said to me was, if the big power people are against Trump, I'm for Trump because he's for the people. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that was basically their thinking. We've got about 5 or 10 seconds left to go here. Any closing comments, Charlotte?
Thank you for having me, George. I enjoy our time together.
All right, and you made some really good comments, and your heart is in the right place, Charlotte. I want to thank
you
for over 10 years of being on the air with me. And anyway, I want to thank our listening audience. We're going to be we have up all the click-offs that we talked about earlier, so you'll be able to get the definition of we'll put one up on odious debt, too. So I haven't done that yet, but we'll put that one up so you to click on also. So you'll, and also the second hour, we're going to rerun Robert Paxton on fascism. I think that's what we're going to do on the second hour. Anyway, keep tuned in to this show. We'll be back in for the second hour with Robert Paxton on fascism. Okay, anatomy of fascism. Thank you for listening. Good night, Charlotte. Bye-bye.
Good night, George.